You're listening to FemWonk, a podcast about inclusion, policy, politics, and current affairs. I'm your host, Katie Davey. Thanks for tuning in. In what is the truly most anticipated podcast of the season, So You Want to Be a Policy Wonk. And by most anticipated, I mean most anticipated by myself, because obviously I love talking about policy, so I'm jazzed for this episode. So recently I've had a number of folks ask me about getting involved in the policy space or doing a master's in policy or really just to pick my brain. I always say yes to these requests because, you know, quite honestly, I've spent the last 10 or so years having no real idea of what I want to do with my life, and I've always valued this insight and generosity of folks that I've asked. But two, I personally have had, and still quite honestly have, a hard time reaching out to people and asking for guidance like this. So I'm thinking if somebody has asked me, they may have also been experiencing that difficulty. So I'm more than happy to share expertise and, you know, my personal experience. So, you know, because I've been getting a number of these requests, I decided that I would just compile some of my general thoughts and share them out this way. Many folks who do reach out to me are young women in Atlantic Canada, so this advice will occasionally have that specific lens. I myself am also a young woman from Atlantic Canada, so it'll naturally have that lens to it. If you're considering a career in public policy or considering a master's in public policy or a similar field, this episode is definitely for you, but it's also for folks who are kind of earlier mid-career looking towards what might be next. I myself had a fairly drastic kind of career shift, if you want to call it that, about 18 months to 2 years ago. So this is a bit of my learning from that point on as well. So I guess the first question you might have is, you know, who the heck is this person to give this advice? Well, I've personally worked in advocacy, a provincial premier's office. I did a quick stint as director of policy in the opposition office. I've written throne speeches, political platforms, started my own policy side hustle. You may have heard of it. It's called FemWonk. I did this all before I was 25. And since then, I've been part of a leading policy and leadership fellowship in Canada called Action Canada. I've traveled the country doing policy-related work. I've written op-eds in the Toronto Star. I've started a kind of nonfiction book club, and more recently I finished a master's, joined a national policy think tank, started doing political commentary in New Brunswick, or rather on New Brunswick politics with the media, and I do also have kind of a small consulting business that I keep going that focuses on these exact topics as well. So That's my shtick. So I think, you know, I didn't really plan, honestly, on having this trajectory, but in hindsight, I think I can share what I have learned and what I think has contributed to my success. Spoiler alert, though, I still have really no idea what comes next for me. So I'll maybe be taking some of my own advice sooner rather than later. I actually had somebody ask me just today, like, oh, so, you know, what are your plans for the future? And I'm like, great question. I don't have a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan. I have a 10-minute plan, and that's fine. That actually works for me. So I guess that's like first piece of advice, do whatever works for you. So first, I think I'll just dive into actually highlighting the many, many, many paths you can take with a public policy background or interest. I often kind of chuckle at this list because as I was doing some soul searching around the holidays last year, I called two of my former bosses and they gave me interesting, yet I would say daunting advice. The first said there were 5 paths I could take: academia, i.e. getting a PhD, civil service or the foreign service, politics, either kind of running or staffing, public relations or government relations in the private sector, or journalism. My first thought was basically, wow, you have high expectations, or rather high opinions of me. And then I immediately started feeling overwhelmed by the idea of a potential dramatic shift. I think there are a few other additional paths that you can obviously take. I'm obviously in the think tank space right now. I think it's a great path. There's also, you know, civil society in the NGO sector where lots of people are doing interesting work. And quite frankly, I think there's an emerging opportunity for public policy folks in both the startup and the tech space. I think also, you know, a lot of people will maybe plan to go to law school and kind of do public policy through that route and lens. in my experience, you can really kind of create your own path if you want to. In some ways, that's what I've done, and it's worked so far well for me, and I kind of enjoy that. So the opportunities and possibilities are endless. Like I said, that, you know, to some people it might be exciting, to others it might quite frankly be a bit daunting. My second former boss told me to basically round out my cup. Well, what did he mean by that? Basically, he meant that if I wanted to tackle certain issues, etc., I could do that in many ways. It didn't necessarily have to be through kind of traditional work. However, you know, I obviously also need to be able to pay my bills and achieve other personal goals. So the advice was essentially like round out all of, or, you know, figure out what your goals are and round them out. I think this was kind of freeing advice, honestly, for me, because I've always been a person who kind of makes my work my whole world. Yes, I know some will say that's unhealthy, but do what feels good for you. So this kind of advice opened my eyes a little bit to define what I wanted actually in my life, and the fact that it didn't necessarily have to entirely take the shape of one job. So honestly, that's kind of what I've done. I've right now in this current moment in my life, I have kind of a general collection of ways I spend my time that really does fill my cup and allows me to actually make sure that I can pay my bills. So I guess, you know, the first question is, what is the first step? Really, the first step is, in many paths, is to set some broad life goals and or areas of focus. Then funnel it down to kind of like a pyramid to have sub goals. So again, what I mean by that, it's very broad. You know, it's, I don't think your goal needs to be like, by tomorrow, I'm going to be the president of the United States. I mean, maybe it is, and good for you, but that's not exactly what I mean. So let me kind of explain this a bit better through how I kind of personally went through my process of deciding to do a master's. So I knew I wanted to get a master's at some point. That was, again, the broad arching goal, get a master's. And honestly, that was because in kind of the more traditional policy spaces like the civil service, you often need a master's just to get in the door, and it can, you know, increase your potential earnings. But I decided like that was a broad goal. Great. So when I had an opening due to, I guess, an unplanned career change, you can read in here, losing the New Brunswick election, I decided it was the right time to apply for a master's. So my kind of sub-master's goals were threefold. One, I only wanted to do a one-year program. Two, I wanted to take on no additional student debt because I had a lot for my undergrad. So I, you know, needed a program that had good scholarship and funding opportunities. And three, I wanted to do a program I was actually interested in. I didn't just want to, you know, go and do a master's in political science to tick off. I also wanted to do a program I was interested in. I didn't just want to, you know, do a master's in political science just to check off a box. I wanted to do something that I knew I would get value out of as well if I was going to invest, obviously, you know, time, energy, money into this. So I had done tons of research to kind of find programs or to define what was available in the market that achieved these goals. And my research led me to the Laurier Masters of Applied Politics really generally met all these goals. So I applied and I got in. I'm really happy I went, and I'm even more happy, honestly, that I waited 5 years between doing my undergrad and my master's. The real world experience really gave me, I think, an upper hand, and it allowed me to actually get more out of the program. So that was my experience, but that kind of demonstrates how, you know, I had this broad overarching goal of getting a master's, and then I had these sub goals. I think that's really important for you to do to kind of set out what your path might look like. And these goals can change, right? Like, honestly, I develop new goals all the time. I put other goals on kind of the back burner all the time. Some are more realistic than others. I guess a demonstration of that is, you know, one of my goals is to write a book. Well, what the heck does that mean or look like, right? Like, that has about a million sub goals if I ever actually want to action that. So I think these broad overarching goals with sub goals is really how you start. So let's actually just dive into the master's question first, because we're kind of on that topic. So if you're sitting here wondering, should you do a master's, either in public policy or in a related field, my very helpful, I'm sure. Answer is maybe. It all depends on what your goals are, and depending what space and what path you want to go down. Obviously, in some cases, a master's will be right for you, and others it won't. And, you know, again, just figure out what your goals are, and that will dictate, I think, where you kind of go. I ever decide to do a PhD, for example, I actually have very different goals for what that would look like, and that's totally fine. I will say generally, you can't go wrong with more education, but also don't just do it to do it. You'll get a lot more out of it if you actually have a plan, and you know, you won't end up with tons of debt and not really feel like you have value out of it. So have a plan and kind of move through that way. Also, I actually called out on Twitter for others to share their advice for this episode, and here are some additional points about masters. So Melissa said she would highly recommend a congruent approach in a Master's of Public Administration versus a Master's of Public Policy. Both Dalhousie and University of Victoria have great online programs, she said. She said it's kind of sometimes difficult to do online and part-time, but being able to apply your learning in real time is a huge benefit. And Lindsay's advice is, if you're going straight from an undergrad to a Master's of Public Policy or similar, look for a program with a co-op or an internship, because it's hard to enter the policy space without workforce experience. So I think these are great additional pieces of advice, and really overall, set your goals, do your research, and do a master's if you want to, but you don't have to. All right, so now I want to dive into kind of a deep chat about careers in public policy. This will maybe read a bit more like a listicle, but honestly, I think it's the best approach in sharing my advice, and then backing it up with examples. To be quite honest, like, this is not necessarily directly public policy career advice. It just happens that these things have worked for me, and I am generally in a public policy space. Honestly, it could be applied to really, I think, many areas. So take that for what you will, but in many cases, I think a lot of these tips will be really transferable and could benefit really a ton of paths. However, I'll just say off the top, my one-liner, or, you know, my big kind of piece of advice is connect with people and learn how to stand out. That's really it. That's kind of the summary of what'll be all of my ideas that come. So connect with people, learn how to stand out. So the number one thing I can recommend is networking. It's hilarious because I personally only recently started feeling better about my networking skills. As an introvert, the idea of walking up to a stranger at a strange event is like pretty much the worst thing I could think of. And quite frankly, it still is. But that isn't the only way to network. Like, how many of you remember going to these like classes or whatever in your undergrad or otherwise, and it was just like networking 101, or like how to network, and you kind of rolled your eyes? Yeah, that was me too. But honestly, well, what's that saying? Your network is your net worth. I mean, it's super cheesy, but it really, really matters. Like, building out a good network has been my best value add, to be honest, in my career. I don't mean that you need to sign up for every single event ever and go and talk to every single person there. Like I said, that's not what works for me. I would seriously go to big gala dinners and talk to only three people that I came with, or like, you know, nod to people I knew, but I was not going up to people. I even hated talking to other people at my table who I didn't know. So you can still create a really great network without doing the, you know, smile, shake hands, business card thing. It just, that doesn't work for me. And it doesn't have to work for you either, right? What I've learned is every single opportunity you have is a networking opportunity in disguise. So whether, just an example, I've already told you about my two former bosses that I called when I was having kind of career soul searching. They're two people who are in my network who are tremendous assets to me. And, you know, that was because I worked with them. Like, I had a job that I worked with them directly, and that was how they kind of entered my network. For me, though, you know, I think way to capture that is networking has really been more about kind of collecting a small group of people along the way that align with my values and align with my goals. That's really what networking is for me. To be honest, I can do a whole, I think I did a presentation, like a speaking opportunity during the pandemic called, you know, the top 10 things you won't find on LinkedIn about networking. So connect with me on that if networking is like something super overwhelming for you. I've got lots of tips. But pro tip is you can actually ask your network for things. And what is your network? It's people you know. That's like, that is point blank. Who do you know? Whether acquaintance or like deep, close personal friend. So you can ask them for things. I really, honestly, it sounds funny to say, I didn't know that. Again, sounds ridiculous to say, but I think it's probably because I, you know, kind of grew up in a blue collar family and it wasn't really like, that's, I don't know. I mean, yeah, my dad particularly has this really extensive network of people he grew up with and people that he works with and it works really well for them. But to me, I didn't really see that as networking, or I didn't really understand that as a network, but that really is what it is. And, you know, quite frankly, like I said, I didn't really know you could ask your network for things. I kind of used to think using your connections for opportunities was like the slimiest thing you could ever do and like only something you saw on TV, but it really isn't. And not only is it not, but it is literally what everyone does. So by feeling uncomfortable asking for guidance or reaching out to have these types of conversations, like everyone is doing that and you should do it too. But I'll say like the golden rule here is just, you know, don't be an asshole. Give as much value to your network as you take, right? Like if you're going to ask somebody for an hour of their time, awesome. But if they ask you for that too, then give it to them, right? Or provide value to them. It can't be a one-way street. That's not a great way to foster relationships or networks. My second piece on networks overall is that social media is actually a great place for networking. You know, I make so many connections, honestly, on Twitter. You know, follow people and organizations that you're interested in and start creating small connections that way. And not only are you going to then actually see kind of opportunities or spaces that they work in, but, you know, if you ever interview with that organization or something like that, you're going to actually have more background and more understanding of that. Or again, if you want to actually kind of make connections and connect with people that you meet online or that you follow because of their expertise, if you kind of show that you know more than just their Twitter bio, then that actually will go a long way. But I will say, like, you also have to kind of at some point get offline and actually get out of your comfort zone. For me, that's, you know, still kind of speaking at events or doing media. That's me reaching a different audience and getting off of my kind of, you know, soapbox on Twitter. And that's incredibly important for building those networks and reinforcing your networks. The second thing I'll recommend is taking advantage of all of the free or, you know, super low cost things that you can. When you're younger, you have so many opportunities to apply for things, like every program ever, or like opportunity, there's so many that are like under 25, right, or under 30. So just apply for them. If you're interested at all, apply. I say this to so many people, like, I say it all the time. The reason, like, that I say it is, you know, kind of the worst thing that'll happen is you won't get in. Or you won't get selected. Well, big deal. If you don't apply, then you certainly won't get selected. Like, it's that, you know, I'm not known to make sports references, but it's like Michael Jordan's, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Please, if I'm wrong on that, don't fact check me. But that's exactly it, right? If you don't apply, you're definitely not going to get in. I personally recently applied for to become a member of the Banff Forum, and on their website it literally said like forum members are usually between 30 and 40, and I'm personally below that age cohort, so I was kind of like, should I apply? Like, I don't know, I'm not really, doesn't seem like I'm kind of the target audience, or, you know, I might not get accepted. But I did apply and I did get accepted. Excellent, that's great. On the other side, you know, I applied fairly recently, I guess, for something I thought I was super qualified for, Women Delivers Young Leader Program. And I didn't get into that. Again, big deal. Like, if I didn't apply, I certainly wasn't going to get in. But, you know, people from time to time, and actually fairly frequently over the last year, have told me that I'm impressive, or like, oh, how do you find all these opportunities? Or like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're doing all these things. And like, literally, most of what I've done to get there is just apply for things. Like, people don't walk up to me and be like, Katie, please take this opportunity. I mean, to be honest, that has once or twice happened and it's like super humbling and amazing. But most of the time it doesn't. Most of the time I do the work, I update my resume, I, you know, fill in all the blocks on an application and I send it off. Anybody can do that. Literally anybody can do that. Like anybody. So if there's something you're interested in, even just like tangentially or you know, think might be the right fit for you, just apply. And you'll be so shocked at what will come out of that. Not only will you, you know, kind of refine your own message, I don't know if that's the right word, but you'll refine, you know, what you're putting out into the world. You'll gain some confidence. And again, if you're lucky to be accepted to some of these kind of programs or things you apply for, you're going to be really quite shocked at the skills that you gain from those experiences, and they will be transferable. And also the people you meet in these programs will become part of your network, right? So it's all building on these things. And building off of the first two points, my second piece of advice is to just say yes. At first, you'll probably have to say yes for free. I still do literally all of my speaking engagements for free. I have not ever once been paid to speak. And to be fair, like on one hand, I can do that because I have a full-time job and, you know, some extra consulting income. So I can spend some time doing that. And that's how I do choose to spend my kind of spare time. But, you know, quite frankly, though, when you're starting out, you really can benefit from stepping up and doing some kind of free speaking or writing or sharing your knowledge, however that might present itself, right? And I think it's a really important thing to do. And it's really important to take seriously. One of my, or I guess an example of this for me even is, I've always been a pretty good public speaker. Like, I've been okay. And because of that, I've never really taken public speaking seriously. Not taken it seriously. I've never taken kind of getting better seriously. But what I did this year is I actually did take it seriously, and I tried to apply, you know, some tips that maybe worked for me. I actually, in some cases, wrote outlines and things like that. Before, I wouldn't do that. I would literally just go off the cuff. I'd be like, oh, you want me to talk for whatever, 15 minutes about this topic? No problem. But now I actually do small outlines, and I sometimes will go over those outlines and practice. And also, like, even just take tips about body language and speech patterns. I don't know if you can tell that here, because when I do the podcast, I really just, you know, ramble in some cases, but I took getting better at public speaking seriously. And so every opportunity I had, I took it as a learning opportunity. You know, you can really benefit from that. Same with writing. Like, I've taken getting better at writing seriously. And, you know, I use opportunities to kind of do that for free in some cases, as, again, learning opportunities to grow and get better. However, two important pieces here. One, it's important to know that when you're, quite frankly, getting kind of exploited, your knowledge is getting exploited. I think we saw a lot of that just recently with, you know, folks in the Black community being asked to share their knowledge and to share kind of, you know, how to do anti-racism work and things like that. You know what? That's in some cases being exploitive, and put a stop to that. I, again, like I said, because I have the ability to still, you know, I'm not speaking or writing for a livelihood, I still feel comfortable doing that. But it's also important to know when it's time to start charging. Quite frankly, like, that is probably, it's probably getting close for me. But that being said, you know, just yesterday, literally yesterday, I got my very first kind of paid freelance writing piece, and I'm super jazzed about it. Like, excellent, this is awesome, I feel very good about it. But that honestly wouldn't have happened if I hadn't demonstrated my expertise and knowledge in this space and actually did some of this free work. So, you know, say yes, do free work if you can. If you can is a big star. And if you can't, you know what, ask for what you think you're worth, and or not even ask for, I think that's honestly a bullshit piece of advice. Like, don't ask for what you think you're worth. Like, put a hard line, figure out what people get paid in that space and ask for that. I will say a second point to this, though, is listen to what you're being asked to do. In the pandemic, I've done presentations on topics ranging from public speaking to leadership to New Brunswick elections and everything in between. I don't list anywhere that I speak about public speaking. It's like very meta. But I was sought out for that. Okay, well, why is that, right? Listen to what people are asking you for. And either one, like, maybe build something out from that. This episode is literally that. I was like, okay, I'm getting quite a few requests to you know, pick my brain or to ask about masters or the public policy space. I'm like, well, cool, I have this platform to get information out. So that's literally what this episode is. But listen to those things and keep a log if you want, right? Like literally write it down. Like if somebody's like, oh, hey, can I pick your brain about X or will you speak about Y? Write it down and start to see what common themes are. The next piece of advice I would have is, you know, building off of kind of the last two, but it's decide what you want to be known for. For a while, I thought I wanted to be known as kind of the gender equality gal or the gender equality specialist. When you had something, you know, on this topic you needed support with, then you would call me. But as I did this work, I actually was increasingly more frustrated that people didn't see kind of all issues through a gender equality lens. I realized that actually one of my superpowers was bringing a gender and inclusion lens to all policy. So I've in some ways now kind of pivoted what I, you know, want to be known for really to the intersection of economic and social policy. In both cases, like these issues have a huge both, you know, gender and inclusion lens broadly that should be brought in always, but that's not what happened. So in kind of in my current iteration, my this kind of intersection piece really frames what guides my work and kind of what I want to be doing. So I think that's really important for you to kind of think about and understand what space do you want to work in and, you know, what do you want to be known for? And once you've defined this, this is kind of the next piece, you really actually do have to develop an elevator pitch. This is almost, again, like, Katie, what are we listening to? Are we listening to, like, you know, business pitch contest 101? I've told you to network, I've told you to develop an elevator pitch. But no, this is like so important. And honestly, you also have to kind of become your own hype man. Your elevator pitch is not telling me about your resume. Quite frankly, I really don't care, like, where you went to school and from when and like all of the things you've done in the last 15 years. Doesn't matter. What I want to know is what problem do you want to solve and how are you going to solve it, right? Your elevator pitch is not like, hello, here is my bio. Also, I have thoughts about how you should write bios, but that's for another time. All your pitch needs to do is open the door for somebody to ask you a follow-up, right? You don't want to bore them with like the facts of your life. You want to tell them what you're passionate about and what you're doing to kind of solve that issue. So, you know, I think about the kind of inception story for this podcast, right? It's like three lines. It's, you know, growing up on the East Coast, I got frustrated by not seeing and hearing the stories that were more kind of inclusive in the traditional media. So I started Femlock, Policy, Politics, and Current Affairs podcast that looks at policy from a gender and inclusion lens, right? Again, as I've already just mentioned, it's shifted slightly, but I'm telling you my problem, I'm telling you how I solved it and what I want to do. So then people are kind of opening the door and asking about it. You can also have many elevator pitches. Obviously, that's like not the pitch I'm going to use all the time, but that works in some spaces and it works really well. So you can develop a whole bunch of things. Just be targeted to what, like where you're at and what you're doing. And this is also, again, great for networking. It's great for building these relationships, etc. But again, you have to actually know what you're passionate about. Again, this is like something happy to chat further with anybody about if they need more kind of support in kind of going through this. The next thing, quite frankly, is imposter syndrome never goes away, but you get more confident. So when I managed stakeholder relations in the Premier's office, I literally, I'm not kidding you, I felt awful 100% of the time because I felt like I was way in over my head. And quite honestly, I think I was. But if I was doing that job now, I'd still feel a little bit like that, but I would hold my own much better because I'm so much more confident in my own ability, my own knowledge. I know where my gaps are, which is another really important thing. And I know how to like ask for help and how to find information, right? So I would feel much more confident in that role. But what was funny is my boss used to always tell me that I was doing a good job and I wanted to scream because I did not feel that way. Again, some of that was imposter syndrome. Some of that was honestly just not really having the tools to deal with the situation I was in. And again, I still feel that imposter syndrome all the time. I think we all do. But I feel better and I feel like I know how to kind of navigate the situations and I know the tools that I need to kind of learn what I don't know and things like that. So again, this goes back to like the apply, the say yes. People give, like, if people ask you to do things, right, they're not being nice. These are things that you're capable and qualified to do. And again, you can apply for things. It's like this whole composite, just the imposter syndrome will be there, but push through. Finally, maybe perhaps most importantly, to be honest, try and find what does fill your cup, right? This was kind of how we really kicked off this section. I told you that a former boss said, you know, you've got to figure out how to fill your cup. But the second part of that is like, do only that. I personally am not living this rule very well right now. I'm probably doing too many things and I need to scale back a bit. I actually recently saw a post that asked, you know, what are you doing right now that's holding you back from achieving your goals? Like, what is on your plate that is preventing you from doing, you know, what you want to be or doing kind of, or achieving the goals that you have? And I actually loved that. In some ways, it's kind of like Marie Kondoing your time. I've got to get better at this. Like I said, I've recently, for example, decided I want to write long form essays for news outlets. Like, this is a new goal of mine, but like literally where would I find the time? I've got time on the weekends, I guess, where I used to be writing my thesis, but I, you know, I'm doing other things. I'm cleaning my house. I'm doing like taking self-care time. And also if I filled that particular time with it, I maybe couldn't do FemWonk stuff, or I maybe couldn't do, you know, board commitments, right? So how am I going to achieve this goal? Where am I going to find this time, right? These are questions I still am grappling with all the time. And also, you know, new goals are going to pop up and new things are going to be interesting and take my time. So I need to really find what fills my cup and do only that. I need to take this piece of advice. So, you know, P.S. Nobody has all of this figured out. Like, everything I just said was my own personal experience. It might work for you. It might not. You might get some value from some of these tips. You might get no value from others. And that's okay. Find what works for you. This was my personal experience. And if this was helpful, let me know. Also, seriously, if you want to follow up or chat about any of these points, email me, DM me, tweet me, like Kim Possible, call me, beat me if you want to reach me. However you can contact me. I have an open Zoom policy for these types of conversations, and I look forward to hearing additional tips and tricks and really hearing, yeah, if this was valuable, and if it wasn't, then you know what? I still want to have a conversation. Thanks so much for sticking with us. I want to thank our sponsor, Glass Sky. Glass Sky works to help the next generation of leaders make the most of their talents and contributions to society and the workplace in powerful ways. They work with progressive employers who want to embrace diversity and gain a deeper understanding of the changes they are facing as their leadership profiles rapidly shift to one of millennial and increasingly female. Visit their website, glassguy.org, to learn more. And if you liked this episode, share it. You can connect with us on social media at FemWonk, and I'll see you next time.